Roger Williams University is hosting a crisis management seminar on May 3rd at their Providence campus. Crises, whether a natural disaster, cyber attack, or financial instability, can have severe repercussions if not handled properly. This is where crisis management plays a pivotal role. Join Roger Williams MBA students and expert speakers to learn how to prepare for the unexpected. The program is totally free and open to the public. You can register online at rwu.edu/events/crisis-management-symposium.
This is the Bartholomew Town Podcast.
All right, so today we continue our coverage of election 2022 as we are now less than 2 weeks away from in-person voting. Of course, early voting is already underway. And we begin looking at some of the statewide bond questions today. And we'll begin with question number three, which is, I guess, being referred to as the green bond. I'll read for you sort of the parameters of what this question proposes before we actually get into it with some expertise here. Again, this is yes on this. The piece of literature I'm reading comes from Yes on Three. So obviously pro this bond. And it's again, the green bond and combating climate change in Rhode Island is how it's pushed. The first component is a municipal resilience program, $16 million administered by the Rhode Island Infrastructure Bank to help local communities restore and improve resiliency of vulnerable coastal habitats, river and stream floodplains, and infrastructure. The second component is the Small Business Energy Loan Program. That's a $5 million bond administered by the Infrastructure Bank to help small businesses green their operations. It provides grants and zero or below market rate loans for the implementation of these clean energy projects. There's also the Narragansett Bay and Watershed Restoration Element. That's a $3 million bond to restore and protect water quality, aquatic habitats, and the environmental sustainability of Narragansett Bay and the state's watersheds. Roger Williams Park and Zoo, $12 million for the construction of a state-of-the-art carbon-neutral education center and event pavilion. A forest and habitat restoration element, $3 million for forest health management and wildlife habitat projects. $4 million for brownfields in matching grants. This is $4 million in matching grants that would go in tandem with additional funding. That is designed to clean up former industrialized sites or brownfields so that they can be revitalized in neighborhoods and be returned to the tax rolls, create jobs, so on and so forth. $5 million for open space, an investment to protect open space to enhance communities. It provides $3 million for state land conservation programs used to acquire and conserve lands of statewide interest and significance, and $2 million in matching grants for municipalities, land trusts, and nonprofit conservation land organizations to preserve valuable open space. Finally, a local recreation element at $2 million in matching grants as well to create new and improve existing community parks and recreation facilities. So hopefully you had your notebooks out so you could jot down exactly what this is, but all under the umbrella of green bonding. And it's again question three, so we have two people who are proponents of this, and I guess the best thing to do is for each of you to introduce yourself. I guess we'll start with Stacy.
All right, good morning, I'm Stacy Johnson, I'm executive director of Roger Williams Park Zoo.
And I'm Topher Hamlet, I'm director of advocacy for Save the Bay.
So a lot of this stuff on the surface, you know, you read it and it's both long-term planning in terms of our infrastructure and just the realities of the changing, well, let's be honest about it, climate change, the way that the earth is shifting in a lot of different directions, that's all a factor. And then some of it is even more in the short term when you think about the development and preservation of open space for people to enjoy, the Roger Williams Park Zoo pavilion that would basically be a modernized classroom for people, particularly young students, to be able to experience whatever programs are coming from the zoo. There's also going to be the naysayers who are going to say, look, you know, we're in tough economic times and we just cannot move forward with any additional spending, borrowing, so on and so forth. So I guess, Stacy, let's start with from your perspective, Roger Williams Park, which I am about a mile away from here in Elmwood, is one of, if not, I think it's the largest park in the city of Providence, and it provides a sanctuary by and large, not just including the zoo itself and the Carousel Village, but the park itself is a vast and important open space here in Providence and the surrounding region. So I guess from your standpoint of advocacy, talk about the pavilion that's being proposed, the classroom, the carbon neutral classroom, but also just the general importance of open space from your standpoint.
Sure, thank you. So the education center that would be our part of this bond proposal catches us up and we temporarily might get us ahead of the curve. Our demand for education programs with the zoo has been continually increasing, and particularly coming out of the pandemic, we saw a boom last year. We actually had waiting lists and had to turn folks away. This new carbon neutral education center and events pavilion would actually increase our capacity by about 25%. And that will allow us to bring in and present more programs for folks for every age level, from preschool all the way up to college students. We're actually working with several of the universities in Rhode Island to present, and team teach animal science courses. So there's an opportunity for pretty much every stratum of society. And as you mentioned, the open space that Roger Williams Park provides is unmatched anywhere. I mean, at 150 years old, this is one of the original major city parks in the United States. And of course, we've been talking about it a lot locally this year, but you hear about, you know, Lincoln Park in Chicago, and you hear about Central Park in New York. This was part of that group of parks that was landscape designed 150 years ago with the idea of being a people's park. And this bond actually helps us and invests in the future to preserve that valuable asset, in addition to connecting to other important initiatives that Topher is going to have, you know, more expertise on than I ever will to talk about. But, you know, we provide that experience for the folks who know how connected they may be to nature, and to get this, you know, our increasingly urban Americans connected back with nature. The rest of the bond is actually making that connection and investing in that environment that is absolutely key to our survival, just like it is for the wildlife.
Topher, let's talk about the from your vantage point of Save the Bay, or with Save the Bay, I should say. You know, when we talk about the Bay right now, Narragansett Bay, we oftentimes flex it into the category of the blue economy, which is important. There's no question about it. Smart Bay, wind turbines, whatever it may be. But that's more in terms of economic development. This seems to be more in terms of conservation and preserving the natural resource that is both the Bay itself and the surrounding land that we've developed and is potentially threatened by climate change. Talk about, from your standpoint, the advocacy that you're putting forth for this bond.
Sure, thanks. The Narragansett Bay itself, as well as the rivers that flow into it, are cherished in Rhode Island. And what we hear consistently is that the Bay is much cleaner than it used to be. And the reason that that's the case is that Rhode Islanders have over the years made these kinds of investments that question three is asking them to make again. So as Stacy mentioned, during the pandemic, we really saw how much people cherish these places. The parks, the coastal access points were flooded with people in numbers never seen before, because they really found some solace, some value in this as human beings. Now, I will say that all these investments that have been made to improve the health of Narragansett Bay happen to have great economic benefit as well. This puts question three, the many types of projects that are environmental in nature actually are going to require the work of Rhode Island's engineering firms, environmental design firms, construction workers. It's a great investment in our place and in our sense of place that happens to have a whole bunch of other benefits that go along with it.
Right. Yeah, no question about it, for sure. There's an economic development component to it. There's a jobs component to it, something that is welcome in these times, no doubt about it. So, you know, when we think of Rhode Island, we think of New England as a whole. Of course, we are a densely populated state. There's no doubt about that. And we have a dynamic urban core and even expanding into places like Woonsocket, Westerly, Newport, wherever. Frankly, even Narragansett, South Kingstown. You know, there are towns and, you know, we're not the deep woodlands of the Northern Territories of Canada or something like that. But we're you know, our identity is definitely tied to nature, is definitely tied to forests. And how important is it from even just the soul of Rhode Island and our own identity to protect open space? We're facing challenges with housing right now, and undoubtedly zoning is going to be something that municipalities look at. How important is it to say, hey, wait a minute, before we develop any further, we need to preserve certain amounts of open space?
I think you just said it. It's intimately tied to the identity of Rhode Island and Rhode Islanders, that we have a green state next to a blue bay. And if we don't invest in that, I mean, you know, two things. Long term, we have to continue investing in conserving these wild spaces. But, you know, as Topher just mentioned, as you kind of alluded to, it actually does have an economic impact, and it's an investment in the literal sense of the term. If we protect these spaces and we conserve Roger Williams Park and we develop the zoo, we're also drawing more folks into Rhode Island as tourists, and we're also providing a resource for our citizens who live here that they won't have any other way. The zoo actually is the largest single site tourist attraction in the state. We did an economic impact study last year and found that we have over $75 million annual economic impact on the state. It's way outside for our annual budget. But what we are finding is that we are contributing as an economic engine to the development of the state and the business aspect of what's going on.
And extrapolating that to broadly our coastline and the bay itself and you know, Block Island Sound, the whole operation, Topher, I guess build off of that notion that this, you know, the more we develop our tourism, ourselves as an attractive place from a tourism standpoint, clearly the further the state is going to be able to grow from both a cultural and economic standpoint.
That's really important. And that is, as you said, Bill, it's in our, you know, the environment, the bay, our upland areas, those are in our soul. They are important to our sense of self and identity and place. And I think the fact that Rhode Islanders have time and again voted to support these green bonds in big numbers, meaning, you know, 70%+ consistently, shows that there's a real just deep value of Rhode Island's environment is cherished. And of course, we can and should develop as a state, but we should also protect the goose that lays the golden egg, and that is our environment itself. And so I think that Rhode Islanders really feel it in their bones, you know, that it's important that we protect and maintain and improve our natural resources here. We've seen the cost of not maintaining something before, and that's our roads and bridges, right? The cost of not protecting and maintaining and improving ends up being much more than if we can continue to regularly invest in the protection and maintenance of our most cherished places.
Let's imagine each of you will kind of go around. You know, you're getting on an elevator. I don't know where. Let's say the Graduate Hotel, and you happen to walk on, and there's a person who's wearing a No on Three T-shirt. Or something like that. They're carrying a sign, and you know that you've got 30 seconds as the elevator is going down to try to convert this person to yes on three. We'll start with Stacy. What's the elevator pitch to someone who is opposed to this bond?
Sure, it's the environmental education pitch. It's okay. You know what? All creatures on Earth require food, water, shelter, space in the proper arrangement. It's much easier to invest in protecting something than it is to repairing it, and that's what this bond is all about.
Topher.
To a No on Three T-shirt, I would say Yo on Three, and I would say, you know, just if you love going to the beach, if you love going to the shore, if you love going fishing, if you want all these things to be available to your grandchildren and future generations of Rhode Island, vote yes on three.
Last couple of minutes here, the there's no line item on this bond. In other words, you can't go through it and say, if you're the voter and you walk into the booth and say, you know, I love the sound of that environmental education center, but, you know, I don't really care about protecting the watersheds. I don't know who would say that. They probably shouldn't be voting if that's the case anyway. But but there's no line item. It's kind of an all or nothing. Do you think that in general, when we build out bonding, this is the right approach to kind of build these large groups of systemic programs that definitely work in concert with each other, but maybe a bit overwhelming to certain segments of voters? I mean, I guess we'll see if it passes or not, but as these are designed, do you think we're designing our bond questions, our referenda, the right way?
I think that's a fair question. I know in the when the green bonds started being introduced, maybe a little bit more than a decade ago, the thought was, Rhode Islanders love their environment, and let's put something in there for everyone. And I think that's the approach that was taken. I understand it. Sometimes things get added to the bond that are peripherally related to Rhode Island's love of nature and open space. But overall, it's actually, while there are many items on the bond itself, it's a pretty cohesive package. That again, there's something for folks in cities, on coastlines, folks who love to be on our rivers and our state parks and things like that. So I think it actually they're actually a pretty good reflection of Rhode Islanders and what we love.
And from our perspective, from at the zoo, what I've discovered, particularly because I'm a new Rhode Islander, I've only been here less than a year now, it's been a team building exercise too, and I expect to see some long term connections and some long term activities that go beyond this election cycle, and really we will share the load and get more done in the future. One thing I'd like to also remind the voters on the last green bond that went around, the investment paid off almost immediately. I know for the zoo's part, the part that built the Faces of the Rainforest exhibit at the zoo, from an economic impact perspective and attendance perspective, it paid for itself in the first year of being open. And I know the other projects that were connected with it had the same sort of results. So this really has an additive effect. And I think that's an important thing to keep in mind.
Gentlemen, really appreciate you coming on today. This is bond question 3. It's on your ballot if you're engaged in early voting or mail voting. And obviously when you go into the polls on November 8th. And hey, a lot of regular listeners to this show know that I am a major proponent of all of these things. And it's a major reason why we love Rhode Island so much. So thank you guys for your advocacy.
Thank you, Bill.
With the increasing legalization of cannabis across the country, including most recently Rhode Island, the cannabis industry is growing at a rapidly accelerating pace. If you are already in the industry or wondering what is the best path to break into the cannabis field, well, the University of Rhode Island has a program to help educate you in the evolving space. Fully accredited by URI's College of Pharmacy, the online certificate program covers topics related to product development, chemical analysis and testing, and patient and customer therapeutics. The next application deadline for the spring 2023 session is November 29th, and courses start January 10th. Join them at 2 upcoming info sessions and learn more at uri.edu/online/cannabis or give them a call at 401-874-5280.
At HealthSource RI for Employers, we provide access to health insurance to more than 1,100 local businesses and nonprofits, and 96% of them renew through us every year. Maybe it's our choice of 19 different health plans, our 10 years of customizing solutions, or our one local team of dedicated experts helping employers find quality health insurance. See how our numbers stack up for you. Learn more at healthsourceri.com/employers.